Welcome to Money Matters with certified financial planner Dave Pezzo. Money Matters is brought to you by Pezzo Financial Consultants. Their team of certified financial planners have been educating their clients to build confidence and find peace with their money for over 35 years. Also by Michelle Oliver of Finance of America Mortgage, lending products for all the stages of your financial life. By HH & Associates Accounting, we aren't just accountants, we provide solutions. By Mountain West Bank, your community bank, with 8 branches in the Treasure Valley. Now, here's Dave Pezzo on KITO Talk Radio.
Take it away, Les Nessman.
This is Les Nessman, your man on the scene here at the Pinedale Shopping Center, where the excitement is mounting. We're here to witness the big WKRU Turkey Thanksgiving giveaway.
Hey, you got permission to be out here?
What?
You're blocking my store here, buddy.
Don't you know who I am?
Huh?
I'm Les Nessman. I won the Buckeye News Hawk Award last year.
Good for you, Buckeye. Now get out of my doorway.
I'm sorry. Creep.
So far, so good, huh?
And there we have it, of course. As God is my witness, I thought turkeys could fly. Kevin Miller in the morning here. Reminding you, a week from today, believe it or not, it's Miller's Mission. One more time, we're at the Gary Walmart Living. That's right, living there. Thanks to our friends at Team Mazda Subaru. Thanks to Camping World, the Boise Rescue Mission, where we'll ask you to, quote, give a turkey, not be a turkey. We so appreciate the generous donations here in the Treasure Valley. Won't you help feed Treasure Valley families this holiday season, this Thanksgiving, this Christmas, by donating to Miller's Mission? We'll be there. We're looking forward to it. Also, if you'd like to make a difference and you can't make it out to the Garrity Nampa Walmart location, you can go to any Nampa, or I'm sorry, you can go to any Walmart in the Treasure Valley. And at when you check out, the cashier should ask you, would you like to purchase a turkey buck? And when you say yes, it costs $15. And with that $15, you'll be able to feed a Treasure Valley family. That's right. Believe it or not, $15 will feed a Treasure Valley family. That is something that we've been working on with our friends at the Boise Rescue Mission, the 11 Walmarts in the Treasure Valley, and our friends at KTSY Radio. You've got the Christians, you've got the Patriots, and you got some Christians here as well, coming together to help folks. So Turkey Bucks going on now at all the Walmarts, and Miller's Mission begins next week. As you've said many times, when are we going to be giving turkeys away? Can't wait to see everybody. And I'll be living there, so once the show is over, you can swing in, hang out, and have a great time. And of course, speaking of having a great time, our great friend Dave Pezzo joining us, the host of Money Matters for over 30 years here at KIDO Talk Radio. Good morning, sir.
Good to see you, Kevin.
Good to see you. First off, your reaction to that tragedy in Texas, the shooting, 26, 27 people killed. You as a man of faith, your thoughts?
It's heartbreaking. It's really something. I don't know what to say about it, Kevin. The same reaction that everybody has is it's heartbreaking. I can't imagine 20-something families and the disruption that this will cause in the whole community and impact the lives of even the people that weren't injured or killed. It's unbelievable. I don't know what's going on or what's wrong with people that they shoot up a concert or they do this. It's just, I don't know. It's just one of those things that makes you question humanity, all of humanity, and it is. It's heartbreaking. I don't know what else to say about it.
Well, there's evilness in the world.
I agree. I know. It's one of those things that just you shake your head because we forget that sometimes, Kevin, that there really is evil out there. And it's unbelievable, though, when it runs and we have events like this back to back, it doesn't feel isolated. It feels like it can pile on at any time and something else is going to happen next week type of thing.
Well, and it really begs the question that if you see something, say something. When we're talking about, people with unusual behavior, that sort of thing, and the holidays can be a tough time for people.
They are. You're right. We're heading into that difficult season, and you're right. We do have to watch out for, whether it's suicide or somebody that's really going to want to take out a bunch of people. We do have to be more aware this time of year. Because we are heading into a time where holidays remind us sometimes that maybe our lives aren't so happy right now and everybody's out there seemingly to be happy except for me. and it makes people feel a little bit more depressed, or if you will, they have a bad situation, a death, divorce, what have you, that they really miss the people that are aren't there anymore.
Indeed, our great friend Dave Pezzo joining us. Let's talk a little bit about the tax bill that the House and Senate want done by Thanksgiving. That seems a little bit ambitious, if you will, considering what happened with health care and everything else. People are worried about what's going to happen with the 401k from CNBC, namely lowering pre-tax contribution limits for 401ks, which currently stand at 18 to 24 for individuals 50 and over. And even though Donald Trump has nixed the idea, people are saying that this could change the way people save for retirement. Is this premature?
It's premature to be worried about the 401k. You know, the reality is very few people maximize their savings anyway. But it's another reason to try to make a failure for Donald Trump's presidency. So I think that a lot of this is noise that if anybody else, certainly any Democrat would have proposed, it would have been met with great fanfare in the press. And what a wonderful thing it is to try to drive the economy forward. And I was told that Democrats wanted to have tax breaks, that they wanted to have a middle class tax cut. But apparently they, you know, under 8 years of Obama, they never proposed doing anything except raising taxes, especially on the middle class. So when we look at this and we have to kind of push back and say, wait, what really is going on here? When we look at the early parts of the bill, some of those things will be changed. But again, Donald Trump has said no, and I actually take him at his word on that. That it seems going backwards to me when we've been moving for decades now. Actually, 40 years we've been moving towards IRAs and self-independence, if you will, self-reliance in our own retirement plans. Taking a step back to limit 401k contributions seems weird to me. I don't think that's going to pass, and I don't think it's any real part of the bill.
Let's go over some of it here at KIDO Talk Radio, our great friend Dave Pezzo. Now, from the Washington Post here, we're going to go a little high speed with you here. We're quoting the Washington Post. So on one side, we have the Washington Post. On the other side, we have Dave Pezzo.
All right.
Are you up to the challenge? I know it's early.
I don't know. It is early. I'm not sure.
You won't get these questions on Channel 7.
I will not. That's for sure.
Homeowners, real estate agents are a little disturbed because they feel that there could be a big increase in standard deduction, meaning fewer itemizers will wallop the housing industry. Also, there's a proposal to lower the cap on the mortgage interest deduction. What do you make of that?
Irrelevant. People that have a lot of money that want a million-dollar house are going to buy million-dollar homes. That's what they're going to do. They're going to buy $2 million homes. And if we cap the interest deduction, so be it. It doesn't really affect very many people, and the idea that we suddenly won't sell any houses is absurd. It reminds me, if you will, that any piece of legislation that comes across, I want to look only for the impact immediately in my life. And otherwise, if I have any kind of course.
Who cares about everybody else? What's in it for me?
Exactly. But that's so short term, because if we're talking about overall tax reform that would allow growth to increase, which this will clearly do, and even the Democrats, economic shills will tell you the same thing. The tax cuts do, in fact, drive economic activity. So the idea that I'm going to sit here and whine and cry about an interest deduction for a 1/10 of 1% of the wealthy people out there, that just makes no sense. It's just not important at all.
All right. Shocking, that answer from Dave Pezzo here. Kevin Miller in the morning, as we're taking a look at the GOP tax cut and how it impacts you. Tax reform, if you will, the increase in the standard deduction also means many individuals won't get the tax break for charitable giving.
Yes. Again, what we're going to do is we're going to give people a really large deduction. And so that's going to be such a horrifying thing out there, because people won't pay as much taxes as they did before. I don't understand the logic, Kevin. I just don't. We're going to give people a larger deduction up front so that they won't have to itemize, which simply means this. It means they don't have a bigger tax break than the one we just gave them. That's all that means. And the idea that people are going to stop dropping off their junk at the Idaho Youth Ranch or writing checks to their Boise Rescue Mission, in my mind, is crazy.
Now, when we take a look at the tax brackets, it's looking at four individual tax brackets. Your thoughts on that? Married couples up to $90,000, or individuals up to $45,000, your tax rate will be 25%.
Mm-hmm.
Up to $260,000, or an individual making $200,000, you're at 35%. And then the last one, which you know, obviously is for people here at the broadcast center, the Millionaire Club. Married couples that earn $1 million or more, or an individual who makes up to $500,000, your tax rate will be at 39.6%. Are you good with that?
As a starter, yes. I'd love to see rates go down, Kevin. I think that we have to get something passed. And so for those people out there that feel like if we can't get a perfect bill, I'm not going to vote for a bill. I think that probably Rand Paul is the perfect classic example of somebody that does nothing, just stands around and talks about how nothing will work.
You hear about him this weekend?
I did not hear about
somebody
him.
Somebody broke into his house. He got assaulted.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I think Friday night.
Wow. No, I did not hear about
that. Does that change your opinion about him?
No, I'm sorry that that happened to him, but no, I think he's one of the worst legislators I've ever seen in my life. All he does is say no to everything. I mean, absolutely everything.
Isn't that what it's about, though, saying no?
It is when you're in the minority, but when you're in the majority, it's about getting stuff done, and he seems to be not doing that, and it's constant. So what I'm saying is that for people that don't want to do anything, and perfection is the enemy of good, this is good, and trying to make a bill perfect is simply not going to exist. People have different opinions of what they want and what they don't want, and they have to come together and have some, if you will, compromise. And the idea that it has to be perfect is absurd.
All right, our friend Dave Petzo with us. Now, here's some good news, and I'm sure you deal with this at the Petzo Center, Petzo Enterprises, and that's people that, you know, want to leave, whether it's a family farm or a business, to their kids, and this is the estate tax.
Yeah.
The Tax Cuts and Jobs Act calls for doubling the exemption amount for the estate tax from $5.6 million to $11.2 million and will eliminate it completely after 6 years. Republicans have been trying to get rid of the estate tax forever. As you talk to real people with real issues, how onerous is this estate tax, or is it all hyped up?
It's both. In the right circumstance, and in the lower amounts, it was very onerous to a small business. It maybe is only worth $1 million or $2 million or $3 million. To the idea that we're going to tax that 50% as you try to have your kids, you know, continue on in that business, they could have been working there for 40 years, and now they have a tax bill they cannot cover. That is terribly onerous. But that would, now that we've raised it up to be $11 million and higher, it is much easier in a company getting that big or having that much value, has other resources that they can utilize to allow the company to continue if they want to do that. But at the same time, and it is a tiny amount, I think we approach this wrong. It's a tiny amount of income for the overall United States. I think we approach it wrong. I think we need to have this discussion. Is it morally correct for you to pay taxes all your life at a very high level? Let's call it 50%, because you obviously have accumulated millions. So you've earned millions. To pay taxes at a very, very high level, to be one of the biggest contributors to all of society, and then when you die, aha, thank goodness he died, now we can go ahead and take half of his estate away. Is that morally right? I think that's a question. You may say, yes, it is morally right, then fine. But I don't. It makes no difference income-wise to the United States, or very little. And so I don't think that it's a question of, well, we're going to break the budget. I think Republicans attack this wrong. They feel it's morally wrong to do it, then stick with that.
Sure.
Don't talk about it from a standpoint of small businesses fading away. There's ways to work around that.
All right, coming up much more with Dave Petzo, and we'll talk about small businesses and what this new tax reform proposal means to you and your business, big or small, and the return of Terry and the Terry and Dave Show. Coming up next here at KIDO Talk Radio. All right, our great friend Dave Petzo with us. Ready to talk to his friend. Oh, you have the headphones there? No,
I don't have any.
We're very informal here. No worries.
You're a pro. You can adjust.
We'll have Terry make a statement, then you'll have a response. Terry, good morning. You're on KIDO Talk Radio with our great friend and your great friend, Dave Petzo. I know you two are very close.
Oh, we had dinner together last week. It was wonderful. Okay, to keep the tax bill into perspective, you know, we've got 78% of all full-time workers that are living paycheck to paycheck. Last year, 75%. We got 71% of the workers are now in debt. That's up 68% from last year. 46% said their debt's manageable. 56% said they're in over their heads. Irony is, these are just the full-time workers. So, is our tax bill going to... let's just throw that into the tax bill. Throw all that in. Putting it into perspective, I don't think tax revenues are going to be able to increase no matter what they do. I think decrease is going to further hurt the economy. Your opinion on that, and go for it.
I'm not sure what you mean. If you reduce the taxes for those individuals, is that not a good thing?
I think confused. He thinks that to quote Terry, I believe he thinks that the government officials are overly optimistic about this churning up, going from 3% to 5% growth or even more.
Or going from 3 to 5 would be overly optimistic. But if we have an increase in the economy from 3 to 4%, a lot of our problems obviously go away, whether they're wage increases, overall investment increases. But we are seeing, Kevin, the same type of thing that you and I have talked about for years, and that is we're seeing the economy pick up just with deregulation, right? Because that's all we've passed so far. Just the idea that the animal spirits of the small businesses are coming out has been a huge positive to the economy. We're growing clearly faster without one piece of legislation. I think this is just an add-on that enables the economy to grow even more. What we don't know, we never can know. And so it's fine for Terry or me to have an opinion of what's going to happen. But economic development, economic activity has always increased with tax cuts. It always has. Because what we're simply saying is that the private sector is smarter and better with money than the public sector every time. A bunch of academic bureaucrats that don't do anything in life except to push paper and tell other people how to behave is not a good use of capital. Leaving more with the private sector, you and I, 100% of the time is always a better idea economically. You may think it's not fair or tax rates aren't fair or this person over here should be penalized because they're super successful or not. That's how people react to it. But to actually argue that the economy isn't better when private enterprise keeps more money than the government does is not arguable at all. That's just simply making stuff up. It's never been true that government does better with money than the private sector.
Well, you know, when you look at the GDP of 3% and we look at the auto sales that came about due to both the massive hurricanes that we had, that really wasn't an increase in GDP. And the irony was the GDP before that was increased by this massive growth in RVs, and it happened the same time last year. So that really isn't GDP in perspective for the average everyday person. So GDP growing, we better include all the car sales. I mean, the hurricanes wiped them out.
Well, I would agree with that you had a big jump in car sales in Houston because of the flooding. There's no doubt about that. Absolutely none. But at the same time, the idea that the economy didn't shrink, which economists knew it would, didn't shrink as much as they thought it would because the economy underlying was very strong. You can't, on one hand, say that the destruction of the hurricane caused doesn't count against GDP, which it clearly does. And then on the other hand, when we rebuild from it, that you can't, then you want to take that away, Terry. That's absurd. I mean, you can't have it both ways. I don't know what you're actually driving at, that the economy really, apparently in your mind, it isn't any good, but it never has been any good to you. So it doesn't really matter what they do or how much it is. You see the world as half empty, and you always have. And I don't actually know what your point is.
So I've always, okay, but anyways, that's irrelevant. The GDP is something that should have an equal benefit for all Americans, just not a specialized group at the time. In this case, hurricane victims. Well, gee, what about the rest of us? And I think that's the point I'm trying to make. It should be across the board for everybody. So when that select group, in fact, does get their benefits from the GDP growing, what about the rest of the country, which is the larger percentage of it?
All right, Terry, that'll be the final question there. And back to our friend Dave Petzl. Let's quickly go to Spencer in Melba. who has a question about taxes. You can be our non-certified CPA if that works for you today.
Yeah, well, we'll within our realm, we'll try.
Okay, Spencer, we've got to make it quick because we're going to go live to Texas here in a couple minutes. Please go ahead.
You know, the guys mentioned before that people are living paycheck to paycheck, but are those people also living within their means, buying a four-wheeler when they don't need one or a camper when they don't need one?
Well, that's a good point, Spencer. Thank you for the call and listening to KIDO Talk Radio. Dave Petzo, your thoughts on how this is all going to play out?
Well, absolutely. Anytime we could put more money back into the hands of the private sector, that's really the point. That's good for the economy, which is good for all of us, all levels of income. What we're really dealing with here, I think, in our country right now is this idea that the rich are getting richer, the poor are getting poorer. They aren't, but they are not growing as fast as the rich are, and that is causing social problems. So, Kevin, I don't know that we can engineer that and create that with government, and certainly with tax policy. It's divisive and it's bad for the economy, which ultimately is worse for the lower income people. But to the caller's point as well, people have got to get a handle on their own income. It's this idea that you just spend and are entitled because you're born to rack up great debts and then complain that you're working paycheck to paycheck isn't a very fiscally sound way to deal with your life. And frankly, as we've talked about on Money Matters for years, it's a terrible, terrible thing because it puts so much stress in relationships and families that people just don't. I mean, having fun today isn't very much fun when you have the credit card hangovers and the bills paying. It's a mess, and it really does ruin lives. It's very important to get money correct.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Kevin. Always good to see you. Always.
To be continued, sir.
Next week.
Our great friend Dave Petzo. You're listening to Kevin Miller on KIDO Talk Radio.
This is Amy Kellogg, Fox News. We report, you decide.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo on KIDO Talk Radio, 107.5 FM and 580 AM.
Hello, welcome, and thank you for joining us. 580-5436. 580-KIDO, that is our number. And I hope you will ring us up and whatever questions are on your mind. Love to visit with you. Yeah, I'm not sure in the second hour in our education segment if I'm going to talk about contentment or active versus passive. That's kind of up in the air. I'm not sure at this point. Now, both are obviously critically important and a little bit on my mind, if you will. Because we are into that argument again all the time, aren't we? It's active versus passive. It's all about costs. And is it? Is it all about cost, or is it actually about results, and how do we measure them correctly? Well, we'll see what I decide at the break here, okay? We'll decide. But we're going to talk about one or the other in our education segment. Right now, I want to touch on global stocks hitting all-time highs. Big deal. Markets at all-time highs. Why is this news? What's the big deal about that? I'll tell you what the big deal is about that. It means everywhere is going okay. It's not going great, but everywhere is getting better. The economy is accelerating globally. The problems of this area or that area, they haven't all gone away. And people, since we all fixate on what's wrong, never on what's right, what's wrong comes up all the time. And then we have this complete disconnect in our brain. Well, it just is all bad. And since it's all bad, then investing must be dumb. It's just bad. You can't do that. And so we look at this on a global basis, and it works very similar to this. But most of the time, the globe isn't all working together, meaning it's not all growing. And right now it is. And the growth is accelerating. Last two quarters in the U.S. have been up over 3%, 3% or greater. Completely unexpected GDP growth. I mean, completely unexpected. This includes the hurricanes, for crying out loud. The hurricane's coming through. It's going to kill GDP by a half to a full percentage point. Apparently, A, it must have been to the lower side of that, like half a percent, not one. B, the economic slowdown was more than overwhelmed by the uptick in other areas of the country. Now we'll actually have some small benefit, positive. It's not as big as what the takeaway was. But, yeah, I mean, because you can't destroy something and then replace it and think that that's economic development. It's not. That's not a positive to the economy. So for those people that think that, you know, it's called the broken window theory, it just doesn't work. You don't break a window, and now because you have to hire somebody to come out, somebody had to make the window, all that, that it's actually economic development. Think this way. Is it a good idea for somebody to drop a bomb in the middle of Boise and then we have to rebuild the whole thing? Or would that actually be an economic setback? Of course it's a setback. It's not a positive. But we do get some positive because we've had the takeaway where there's the economic slowdown, right? Now we have a little bit of positive from economic development. Very little, but we have some. So that's going to be adding in. We saw that in auto sales as an example. Talked about in the last, you know, with the segment with Kevin. But we are seeing that here. We're seeing it everywhere. And when you think about the stocks of the S&P 500, which are the great corporations of the world, U.S.-based, 60% or more of their sales occur overseas. So in other words, when other markets are doing well, that's good for them. So this is a big deal. It's a big deal that the whole world is starting to grow faster. And of course, there's always going to be people out there that, you know, blah, 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 but. I get it. Okay. Blah, 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 but. Just fill in the blanks. Make whatever excuse you want for why you're never in the market because it's all coming unwound at any point in time. But it's nothing more than excuses. It's not intellectually smart. It may be intellectually satisfying to an individual. But it isn't smart to overthink things at all. It's not smart. It keeps people out. You know, as we look at the market, we're going to talk about this over the next coming weeks because market throws people off, as we said, the market. I wish there was some way of saying this in a different way that people understood. Because it really is, this is what we think of it when we call it the market, like it's some kind of separate being. It really shouldn't exist. And we're just bidding on like Bitcoin or a pretty brick. There isn't any real economic thing here. It's just a thing. And we bid it up in price, and then hopefully we sell it before somebody else catches on to how crazy it is. Because all it is business. It's businesses. Stock is ownership in a business. It's not a thing. Yeah, I have an economic interest in Apple. That's what I do when I own Apple stock. You own mutual funds that own Apple. That's what you have. It's not a thing. It comes up, it makes profits or it doesn't. It has cool products or it doesn't. It pays dividends or it doesn't. It's growing or it's shrinking. It's a business, not this abstract thing. So this group of businesses that we happen to call the market doesn't do normal. It bounces around in price. It has really, really, really good years, like the year we're having. Although, of course, a year ago, we knew if Donald Trump was going to become president, the market was going down at least 10%, maybe 15%. We knew that because all the smart people told us that. Sorry, they were wrong. But you see, it goes up big, and it sometimes comes down. Most of the time, it's up. But what it doesn't do very often is normal. And we're going to talk about that because it really does throw us off. Throws us off big time. Let's go to the phones. Let's go to Jim. Are you there, Jim?
Yeah, Dave. How's it going?
Good. Very well. Thank you.
Yeah, I think you are totally wrong about the broken window thing you were talking about.
Oh, no.
I mean, if we didn't have destruction, if we just continued to build, I mean, that's why wars are good because, you know, It is just, if we kept building and nothing got replaced, we'd run out of land. If people didn't die, we'd run out of places to put people.
We'd fly them to the moon, Jim.
That's just common sense.
Well, it's common sense, perhaps, in your mind, but the reality is if destruction was good, why don't we just destroy buildings? If the economy's bad, let's just knock them all down.
They do sometimes.
Well, they as long as somebody's willing to invest and build a new one. But I'm saying as an economic theory, destruction doesn't produce more than the destruction.
When you destruct, you've got to use materials, you've got to hire labor. Now, what part of that doesn't sound like it's going to increase the economy?
Well, okay, so let's use your common sense, and we'll circle back to that, but let's use your common sense. Why then, in economic theory, why don't they just go out and when we're in a recession, they say, you know what? What we need to do is take a large U.S. city, let's move all the people out, and then let's just destroy it. And then we'll rebuild it, and the economy will be fine. Why don't we do that?
Well, you heard of the WPA, didn't you, during the Depression?
They didn't tear things up, Jim. They built them. They built all new cool things, Hoover Dams, things like that, canals, roads. They did bridges, all those things. But they didn't come in and just arbitrarily go, let's just tear up some stuff. Let's destroy the infrastructure, and then we'll rebuild it.
What part of something being torn down and then rebuilt sounds bad?
Well, there's cost in what you have there. That's like saying if I break the, like, again, it's called the broken window theory, okay? It's a wide theory for centuries, because people would make the same argument you're making, and they say, okay, that's fine. So why don't we just go ahead and throw a rock through the window? I mean, the economy's slow. Let's throw a rock through the window. Let's kick down a door. Why don't we just go ahead and rip the roof off of a place? And then everybody is going to be busy and working in the economy. It'll just boom if we have an economy driven by tearing things up, destroying what's perfectly good, and then we'll rebuild it. I'm not saying that creative destruction isn't wonderful and the core of capitalism and the fact that we can rebuild because great resources are being put to the task in Florida and in Texas. These are very important things and they do help, but the destruction itself stopped the economy in its tracks, right? You're not talking all the restaurants are done. Nobody's working. This is a huge economic impact. I mean, it is completely done with, what is it, the third largest city in the country stopped. There was no activity whatsoever for weeks.
Okay, a restaurant is torn down. That restaurant can't act as a restaurant. However, people come back in and rebuild the thing. If we didn't, we can't just continue to build and not have anything torn down.
Well, I understand, but that's the nature of things, right? I mean, it's the same thing. I'm going through a remodel at my house, right? I mean, it's because it's like 70 years old. So it needs some new stuff. It's wearing out. But it isn't a good idea to take a new house out in Eagle or something and say, hey, that's a great job over there. Let's go ahead and just bulldoze that down now. That is not economic positive. It's economic negative.
You're the one that brought that up. No, I'm not saying do it intentionally, but I'm saying when it needs to be done, if buildings need to be rebuilt, people get hired.
They do, but Jim, what I'm saying is it's not a net positive to have a hurricane go through an area because it's destroyed perfectly good things.
Okay, you just brought up the fact that the hurricanes did not decrease the GNP.
No. I did say that they did decrease. We just don't know by how much. I'm saying that what I did say was, in fact, that the 3% growth that we had for two quarters in a row includes the hurricane destruction, which economists thought we'd lose at least 0.5%, maybe more than 1%, because of the double whammy of Florida and of Texas. And of course, Texas was Houston, which of course is like the third largest city in the country. That was a big, big deal.
Well, for one thing, the effect of those have not been felt yet. I mean, that was in September, the end of that, you know, so we'll have to wait till the end of this quarter to find out what the effect of it was.
Right, but we'll have some positive, as I was saying, there'll be some positive from the rebuilding efforts coming back. It's just not full. I'm not saying we don't have any positive by selling more cars. It's just that losing all those cars is a positive for the overall economy. It's only a positive for General Motors, right?
Right.
It's not positive for the whole economy.
After World War II, things boomed when we were rebuilding Europe.
Well, that's we boomed here. That's correct, but there was great expense over there, right? I mean, deciding that Europe in rubble was an economic positive is not true. It's not true at all. They were incapable of even feeding the people there because it was such a difficult time for them. So rebuilding, yes, we did. And we boomed largely in part because we had the only industrial economy in the world. We were the only ones capable of doing a rebuilding project like that. So our great industries really thrived because they were the only ones in the world. There were no competitors to the General Electrics of the world. There were no competitors at all. And that's obviously that helped the United States tremendously during that period of time. And it was very, very profitable for those businesses. And of course, we had obviously near zero unemployment as we rebuilt the entire world. But wars are not an economic positive. They're destructive. They're terrible. It's not just loss of life. It is also a loss of all that property is not an economic positive.
Hey, Dave, when was the last time you talked to an economist?
Actually last week. Why?
Well, next time you do, you bring this up to them and see what they say.
Well, that's what the broken window theory is, Jim. That is an economic theory. It's not even in dispute.
It is with me.
Look it up.
Well, okay.
Well, you can dispute it if you think so. Then I'm just taking it to the extra extent and saying, if you think that destruction is good for the economy, then you've just answered all of the riddles of how to make the economy boom. Just build stuff, tear it down, build again, tear it down, build again, tear it down. That would be what you're saying. It's okay because destruction is a net positive. I'm telling you, it's not.
Dave, you're being ridiculous. Talk to you later. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye. And we do have to take a quick break. Our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo.
Hello, welcome, and thank you for joining us. 580-5436, 580-KIDO. Talking about global growth, and it is a huge thing because we have 60%, over 60%. Of the profits, sales profits come from overseas sales. So when the overall globe is growing more rapidly, profits of U.S. corporations, as well as all global corporations, rise. It's a very big deal. So as we talk about, we think about just the marginal differences. What does it mean, and we're talking about tax reform and all those things, what does it mean if we can drive GDP growth a half or a full 1% more? It means most of our problems go away. It's that big a deal. See, a little bit more compounded over the years equals a lot more. So a little bit of growth more is a lot of everything. Plus the multiplier effect. We miss this. The multiplier effect basically says this. I'm doing really, really, really well. So I buy more stuff. And then the people who are selling me the stuff, they do better. At least better than they were because they got another sale made. And then they do a little bit more. It's called the multiplier effect or velocity of money, but it's a multiplier effect through the economy of things getting a little bit better. And so as people are earning more and doing better, it multiplies and feeds on itself. We eat out more. We save and invest more, yes. We even pay down debt. And you're saying, well, what good is that? That's a safety thing. It means the economy isn't heading towards a bubble. It is not an overly leveraged bubble. So it's a safer environment. That's positive for business as well. It also keeps interest rates down. But most importantly to this equation, businesses begin to expand because all of a sudden people are buying more of their product. They need to make more. They need to have more seating for the restaurant. They want another restaurant across town. All of those things happen. And it's a multiplier effect of just doing a little bit better. Boy, do we miss that. It's not, we got to do great and it all has to be perfect. And that's one of the frustrations I think so many people
find whenever we're talking about Congress. It isn't going to be a perfect tax bill. And there might be something in there that you really, really, really like. But overall, it's a big deal to the overall economy and a huge positive. Hello and welcome to hour number two of Money Matters. I'm Dave Pezzo, and these, of course, are my opinions and my opinions only. They're not the station or broker-dealer or anything like that. And the important part of remembering all this is that that's not just disclosures. It's all true. You know, past performance is not indicative of future performance. That's not just a saying. That's really super true. I know your brain doesn't work like that because you know what? Mine doesn't either. It's really nice if I could just kind of point A to point B and so on. Things are good, so own stocks. Things are bad, don't. Doesn't work that way. Does not work that way. Things aren't in a straight line. Things are very confusing. And when we talk about an individual stock, I know you should own Google. You need to own Amazon because they're conquering the world. Until they don't. All looks so easy in hindsight. Isn't so easy going forward, or you pay too high a price on an obvious story. Doesn't work that way. It just doesn't. Buying bargains and holding on, that works. Excuse me. I think I've got a, I don't know what I swallowed, a hairball. But the point is, as we are diving into this, I've got about three different things I want to talk about. And I'm kind of going to connect the dots a little bit, not all three. But I want to talk about active and passive, but in a different way. We've talked about it before. You know, here's the statistics, and passive is better than active. And they put this big halo on it, right? You know, I was in Chicago here a couple weeks ago. I went to a conference, and speaking of economists, that's all it was, right? It was an economic conference. And so in the discussion, whether it's active or passive, this company had done a study of, just of thousands of investors and what their feelings were about passive investing. And fascinating was that 70% of the people surveyed said that passive investing was less risky. Okay, it is less expensive. It is. It does, by definition, keep you fully invested all the time. It does have some tax breaks if you're talking about your non-IRA money. But it isn't less risky. It doesn't cure cancer. It doesn't have a higher income or anything like that. It just is the index. It's the market, if you will, or a segment of the market. If you slice it up into some different way, like small caps or value stocks or energy companies. But for some reason, there's this like, because there's a recent bull market and fully investing in those companies that are doing the best in a bull market is really, really good. That's what you should do. You should buy high things that are even going higher. That's what you should do. You shouldn't try to find bargains. You want to find expensive stuff. Totally contrary to long-term good investing. But that's what indexes do. They buy more of what's already gone up in value, right? I mean, they have to because they take more of the index. So it's a momentum play. It's a chasing play. You ever more want to keep paying higher and higher prices for your stocks. Opposite of what we would say, right? You want to buy low and sell high. They want to buy high and hope it keeps going up. That works in a bull market. But it doesn't mean you're taking less risk. It means you're taking more. I mean, it just, but we get a halo effect on some of these things. So I think it's important to understand what is passive investing? It's riskier because you're fully invested all in the market. You're not in dividend paying stocks. You're not trying to find good value. Not at all. It's the most volatile sector there is. Is the market. But when we put a halo effect, we misunderstand a lot of things. You know, like, well, since we have a hurricane, we're going to rebuild, and so the GDP numbers are all inflated. What about the fact that business stopped for 2 weeks? That's like, we don't count that as an economic impact? Of course we do. Of course it's negative. But it's difficult, I think, apparently, for people to understand. Otherwise, it's obvious to me, we would just blow up buildings and rebuild them. That's how the economy works. What do you do for a living? I blow up buildings. What do you do for a living? I rebuild them. That's what we'd have. What do you do? Well, I pick up the rubble, and then we move it over here, and then we have a bunch of other people that come in and they rebuild it. Obviously a little oversimplistic. But we have this idea, we paint some kind of halo on certain things. And it's not that you can't use it or shouldn't. But passive and active seem to be very cyclical. Active, clearly, in a more sideways and negative environment, does much better than passive, because you're fully invested versus not being fully invested. You have more defensive nature in most portfolios. Now, can you create an active portfolio that is more risky than the index? Of course you could. But it's certainly by definition, and most all of them, are less risky. So we have to be careful what we paint over, what we think we know as fact about certain things, or what we want to think we know, right? I mean, if I want to believe in a certain thing, don't I gravitate towards the facts that support that argument? I mean, it's as an example, and I don't want to get political here, but if we want economic growth and cutting taxes means we do, and getting less regulation and having less government in our life is a fact, and socialism on the other extreme never has worked. By the way, it's the 100th anniversary of communism. Did you know that? Only 100 million people died in those 100 years. 1 million a year died because of communism. So see how centralized planning doesn't work. It's less effective. It doesn't work. And in fact, obviously, taken to a more extreme, fascism, a less extreme, still goes to communism, socialism, and it doesn't work. And it can be devastating. But that's not even arguable. But if I want to find certain data points that support the argument that I think that the government is smarter than the individual and it needs to take over in whatever situation, don't I find little data points for that to support that? Isn't that how we all are wired? So if I want to believe that, then I talk about women don't make as much as men. Now, I don't want to do any further analysis that says professional women make more money than professional men, and that doesn't seem fair, so I think that all the women attorneys out there need to take a haircut. I think all the female urologists that get paid more because they're in demand the government should step in and do something about that. My point is if we want to make an argument, we grab our data points. So I don't want to make the argument that active is better than passive. They're different. I think they both have a place. But one of the important things, this is where I'm going to twist into the ups and downs of the market and understanding that, and why active management can be very, very important as a part, even a big part of your portfolio, is that the markets don't do normal. So that you understand this, just to give you the numbers, over the last 90 years, right? So that's basically 90 years is how long the S&P has been around. And that's a broader, better index than the Dow. So 90 years. Of those 90 years, 67 years are positive. 24 are negative. So we have an overwhelming 3-to-1 advantage here, nearly 3-to-1. Nearly 75% of the time, the market's actually up on a one-year basis. I mean, what lunacy it is to sit around and predict. Well, I think it's going to be down. I think It's almost never down. I mean, that's just a stupid bet. It's stupid. Nobody would say, you know, what do you think the market's going to do this year? It's going to go, I think it's going to go down. Why would you say that unless you were paid 3-to-1 odds? Why would you say that? Makes no sense. We talk about the new norm for the last several years, you know, really low single digit returns. It's all you can expect in the market because of where we are, blah, blah, blah. So how'd we do the last year? Was that normal? Did we have low single digit? No, we didn't. Since Trump's elected, we're up 23% on the S&P. 23. You say, well, that's just Trump. It was all, he was in a new norm before. Yeah, well, we did 16 the year before that. New norm. Yeah, we all got it penciled in, dialed in, you know, because we're really, really, really smart. We all know we can't. We do some P/E ratios. We do economic. You don't know. And the market proves this over and over again. 24 years down, 67 up of our 91-year periods. And then on top of that, when you think of the years between 8 and 12%, since I will tell you, and you already know because you're geniuses, that the market has averaged 10%. Since 1926. 10. The middle point of the 8 to 12, right? So right in the middle. So probably as I put all these and stack them in a column of all those 90 years, and we say how many of them are going to be in that 8 to 12 range, it'll be a big pile, right? Six. Six of 90. Six. Now, this is why it's important. So important to get this. If you're not going, whoa, 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 whoa. You mean like 7% of the time the market does normal? Less than 1 in 10 years the market is normal? Uh-huh. Wait a minute. So we're talking about a market that's way up or way down. Is that what you're saying? Uh-huh. In fact, the biggest column when we stack it is if it does 20% or more. And we just added another year to that. Think about that. The market, most of the time, if you're going to take a segment of time, segment, more than any other segment is 20% or more. It doesn't do normal. But our mind thinks normal. We draw linear paths to our destination. Not squiggly ones. Linear. We don't think of the market doing 10% over our life as comprised of mostly 30 percenters and 23s and 25s and a couple of 8 or 10s, which is what we think of. We think that's going to be the big thing. Combine that with the down years equals this average that we see as a straight line in our mind. And yet when we're thinking about active and passive, that can throw us off big time. Especially when we start and we reverse and we say, what are we going to do with my investments in retirement? What are you going to do? How are you going to generate income? Well, it's all right. The market does 10% a year. No, it doesn't. It rarely does 10%. 7 years out of 100, it does that. Almost never does it do anything like normal. Well, I don't care if it does 27%. That's right. But where are you going to eat on when we go down 15? What are you going to do when you go down 8? Even 3? And you want to take out 4 or 5% and live on it. What are you going to do? Well, that's all right. It'll bounce right back. Will it? Does it always come right back? Or maybe we got a couple of flat years or 20% decline is comprised of a 10 minus another 10 to get us there? And we got 2 or 3 years before we come back? And will you behave correctly? How are your emotions? Are they going to be in check? Oh, yeah, I got that covered. Of course you do in a bull market. Of course you do. Of course you got your emotions handled now. You're not going to react weird. What did you do in 08? Did you take money out of your 401k and pay off your house, pretending that was a smart move? just kind of set aside a little bit, make sure it's okay. What did you do? See, if you're going to ride this roller coaster, if that's what it looks like, then probably being passive is okay. And a piece of it is. But we got to be careful with this. And we really have to go, you know, this is interesting. I mean, it is really fascinating. Most of the time is up, but normal is not what it does. That's an aha moment, right? I mean, that's a, wow, that's just crazy. See, this is the easiest, hardest game in the world. It is. It's so super easy. As I said last couple of weeks, right, we've got this scales, right? The scale, like the scale of justice in front of us. On one hand, we have this, the greatest investment ever designed, created. It's wonderful. You would say, what would you like in an investment? How about an investment that returns more than anything else? Okay, that's a good start. Let's do that. Well, stocks do that times a gazillion, right? I mean, it's not even close. There's no other investment on the planet. One. Well, I want it to be liquid so that if I need to take some money out and, you know, pay for an education or whatever, it's not like I have to go through and sell it for a year, or if the market's bad, I can get out. I want it to be liquid. Okay, that's fair. Let's just do that. Like that, you mean? Well, you can't do it on a Saturday, but any business day you can. Okay, that's a good thing. How about, I know, let's make it so it's really, really, really low cost to get in or out. I mean, just like if you wanted to trade, it would be like you'd have next to no cost. Okay, let's do that. Really? And I don't want to have any responsibility. I don't want to be woken up in the middle of the night. I don't care if the sidewalk is icy or something. I don't care if the roof caves in. I don't want anything to do with that business. Just send me checks. Okay, we'll do that. In fact, you're not even allowed to come here. We don't want your input. We'll just send you checks. Okay. And it's available at $50 a month, so everybody on the planet can do it. You mean poor people can do this? This is crazy. Yep, poor people can become rich doing this. Really? Why would we let them do that? They can't. Most choose not to, but they can become rich easily. All of that on one scale against the molehill that prices periodically, temporarily decline. That's it. That's what you put up with for all of that. So when we think we're going to react emotionally, I mean, it's the easiest game in the whole world. Just get in. Stay in. And quit being a little girl. Grow up. Own the great corporations of the world. And I mean own. Don't freak out and trade. It's all that volatility that so much throws us off, because we define risk only as price movement. Not that we won't have enough money. Not that inflation won't tear us up. We only define it on this one aspect. And it wrecks us. Pretty crazy. But understanding going in, understanding how that 10% long-term average is comprised is important, I think, to set the right temperament in place. Our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. It's dave@petsofinancial.net. If you have an email question, right now, we've got nobody on the line. I need to talk to somebody. Really, seriously, give us a call. We'll be right back. Hello, welcome, and thanks for joining us. 580-5436, that's our number. Please do give us a call. Love to visit with somebody out there. Oh, shoot. If you prefer email, it's dave@petsofinancial.net. 23% gain in the S&P 500 since Trump was elected. Over 30% for the NASDAQ, the tech stocks that all those folks voted voted for Hillary and raised money. I mean, it was some astounding number, like $200 to 1 in Silicon Valley was for Hillary. Pretty amazing. And yet those are the stocks that are doing the best because a pro-business agenda, especially one with, we'll see what happens with taxes, but allows us to repatriate over $1 trillion from overseas at a reasonable tax rate would be an economic boom. Oh, they're just going to buy back stock. They might. I don't know where that's bad. Well, they need to do it to expand. Only if it's profitable. That's what capitalism is. As we look at this and we look at the tax reform and the direction and the deregulation, that's why the market's doing well. It's also doing well because the globe is starting to grow. And we started off today's program talking about global growth because global stocks are at an all-time high. Not by some weird, well, what about QE and this and this? QE ended several years ago now. And I know it was going to be the end of the world, except it wasn't. But rather than admitting they were wrong, the doomsdayers moved on to the next problem, as they always do. Like a stopped watch, we have corrections, periodic, temporary. Always have. And then so they get to parade around and for a few months as we go through our correction. It was a six-week correction. They had 6 weeks in January through February of 16. Oh, yeah, that's right. That was 50% ago in the market. Oops. It's pretty helpful to have them scaring you out so you don't have that 50% gain that you would. Global stocks are doing better, and I think we miss that. We miss this big picture of we are part of an overall economic globe. And as we become more productive, the world becomes more abundant. Business does well. In spite of periodic, if you will, certain to occur over and over again all the days of our lives, corrections, the trajectory continues to be up, and we miss it. And I don't know that some of them don't miss it. Of course they don't. They have created a giant sales engine, a geared around gold and, you know, and things like that. Giant sales engine to get people to watch or listen to what they write. Because bad news sells. Doesn't make bad news right, but it sells. And it's easier for us human beings to believe in that. Because the evidence of our whole life is contrary to that. Isn't that interesting? All the evidence of our life is that things grow. All of our life. All of our parents' lives. All of our grandparents' lives. This is true. We have periodic disruptions. But the trend has been relentlessly higher. But we choose not to believe that, which is right in our face. We pick what we want to believe, not what is so. Our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. We have to take a break for Fox News and hopefully for your phone calls. We'll be back. Hello, welcome, and thanks for joining us. 580-5436, that's our phone number. Dave at Petso Financial is our email address. Dave at PetsoFinancial.net is our email address. If you want, if you prefer email, that would be just fine. Tap it out, send it over. We should get it, hopefully, before the end of the program. Sometimes I can't answer them. You know, if we're onto a phone call or something, we always take those as a preference. If we ever get them, although I did just have a call and I wanted to, they wanted this information. Is it available on our website? I'm going to find out if we can get it there. This particular piece, and get it there. We'll find out. If I can't, here's the deal though. call the office. We can scan this in and email it to you, okay? If we can't, for whatever compliance reasons, do that. This is a piece that is made for the public. I see that on here. So we're good in that regard. But again, I don't know if we can get it out actually out on the website or not. My assumption is yes, but in case not, you can always call us if you did want this data. I do find a lot of people that want this particular piece. Once they see it, understand it, it really does stand out as to how powerful it is to understand the volatility of the market. And it's not your enemy, it's your friend. Markets do decline periodically, sometimes severely, but it's always temporary. Always. And nearly 3 out of 4 years are up. So even on a short-term basis, stocks win most of the time. On a long-term basis, they always win. They're the highest return vehicle. But what's fascinating, too, is when you add some, not conservative management, but management in there. Long-term, you say, oh, God, who cared long-term? I mean, but here's what company that's been around like since the 30s. Okay, I'm not joking, right? So this is a fund of multiple managers. I mean, it's just been around forever. Been around forever. So they have enough data points. This is what's fun to me to understand. Enough data points, because when people come in, it's like, if you had, for example, you're thinking about on an investment, I'm thinking about making an investment, and but I'm a little concerned. I know there's some risk. And I understand the long-term return is more than 10%. That's really awesome. That sounds exciting. But if I were to give this to you for, say, 5 years, what are the chances are I'm going to win? I mean, not have a loss. I mean, it may not be 10%. Maybe it's even better. But in something that averages 10% per year, more than that, what are my chances of losing on a five-year basis? And the answer is 6 times. Out of 80, only 8% of the time. 8% of the time. 92% probability. Well, guess what? I'd take that bet, wouldn't you? Would you take that bet? I would. Here, it gets better, though. It gets better. Wow. It gets better. What if I gave it to you for 10 years? Yeah, 10. Solid 10, bam, put in a box. I promise I won't look. How many times am I going to lose? And I'm not talking all of my money. I don't want to lose a penny. I don't want it to be down like 1%. I want all of it back or more. Well, on a 10-year basis, it's 100%. Of the time. 100% time. So in the highest earning investment there is, you can do it for $50 a month. 100% of the time. It's not lost money on a 10-year or longer basis. Are we really long-term investors? You know what I mean? Are you really? When you're fussed about whether the portfolio goes up or down a few points? Yeah, I'm a long-term investor. I'm just taking a peek. Are you? Because taking a peek does help you do what? Keep you centered on what your objective is. Reminds you why you're in there long-term. Helps your digestion a little bit. Why? If you produce income, do you care? Quick analogy. You own a building. And you've owned it for, 30 years. Every year. You're not allowed to go on the property because you've got a property manager, right, or something like that. They never even call you. In fact, you call once in a while and ask, and they go, we got it. Go away. Well, I'm available this winter to, plow the sidewalks, do a little interior work, No, no, we don't want you. Just go. Go away. And every year they send you more money. Every year. And then somebody comes up to you and says, hey, I just heard your building went down 25% in value. And so you say, I probably better sell. I better look into this immediately and consider selling, even though it's done exactly what I hope to do and more. Or you don't care. Because why would you care? I think you don't care. I think you'd look at somebody like they had a third eyeball in the middle of their head. Like, what are you talking about? Who cares? They send me more money every year. Price is not what I'm concerned about. Value is. My kids can worry about it when I die. Then they care about price. Till then, I keep getting more money a year. Why would you care? You see, we treat it differently because it's a pricing thing that happens all day long. But instead of saying, well, that gives me liquidity. It gives me the ability to buy when others are panicking. In other words, I can pay low prices on things. We choose to freak out often. It costs us dearly, very dearly. It's not a good thing. It is a good thing, but our reaction to it isn't. And the closer attention we pay, we think we're learning stuff and growing in it. And believe me, I've been doing this for a long time, and I'm not trying to insult anybody. But it doesn't take very long and very many questions to know what crap you're reading. I don't mean to be so strong, but you just hear this all the time. Isn't the market too high? Isn't the market too high? Okay, well, that'd be Stansberry Research. Okay, that's good. Okay, I got it. Okay. Okay. Oh, well, I've been reading the Shiller P.E. ratio has never been higher. That's correct. Never been higher. I know there's no reason at all other than, well, 2008, that might be in the numbers, but okay. Because the Shiller index next year could just disappears to nothing. Because of 1 year drawdown in profits. What a great index. But it kept you out of the market for 12, 15,000 points. Positive development there. You know, you see, it depends. It doesn't take long to understand where all of this is coming from. Or also to understand that there really isn't a lot of depth of knowledge. There's good vocabulary skills here. I understand. I can say P/E ratio. I can do this. But can you relate that to interest rates? Can you do anything besides regurgitate what you heard? Can you understand that P/E ratios don't necessarily apply in all circumstances? In fact, sometimes when you have very low P/E ratios, you better run, not dive in. Depending on what kind of industry it is. There's a lot to it. In picking up a bullet point or two, in today's 10-second news bite world, that's not knowledge. I'm sorry to tell you. And it's not healthy for us. It drives us to bad decisions. It really does. It really, really does. Our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. We got to take a break here. Final segment upcoming. Would somebody please call? Seriously. We'll be right back. Hello, welcome, and thank you again for joining us. And thank you for joining us for approaching 35 years. It's crazy. Crazy talk. That's what that is. Crazy talk. Amazing. 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 Over 30 years. Wow. Where did it all go? Where did it all go? Now I'm of the age that I understand what all those people before me were saying. It does go fast. Let's go to the phones. Let's go and talk to Debbie. Debbie, thank you for calling. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Dave. Thanks for taking my call.
You got it.
I have a question for you about the tax bill. I'm the director of a nonprofit, and we've had a lot of emails this week from organizations saying, you know, we need to protest this tax bill because it's really going to hurt the nonprofits. I just wanted to get your opinion on that.
I'm not sure why the argument is there that we have, you know, back in the day, if you will, many years ago, charities did fine. America's always been the most charitable nation on earth. And those causes that are near to our heart, we support. And I don't think that the tax deduction is why we support it. It may help on the margin, but I don't believe that this, I mean, it wasn't the case several years ago. It really wasn't. Tax rates were very high and deductions were limited. Most people did not have a lot of deductions. And nowadays it's even worse. We don't have, most people don't itemize deductions anymore, which means it doesn't matter what the charitable deductions are. You get a standard deduction of which they're looking to raise. So I suppose if we decided the tax code would be better, if we only wanted to target charities, we'd say the only tax deduction you get is if you give to charity. And otherwise, your tax rate's 90%. That's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, we wouldn't do that. I mean, 90% with only one deduction. That's how we would narrowly define what's best for me as a charity or what's best for my foundation, whatever it is. And I don't think it's a question of fighting the tax bill because of that. I think that what you're seeing is people who want to see Donald Trump fail. Because the same exact discussion, if it was made by Democrats, which I don't know why, but they had 8 years of Obama to decide to work with the Republicans on some tax reform. It never came up. Although I, all my life, I've always heard people saying, I want to see a middle-class tax cut, particularly Democrats. And now we have one, because this is clearly not targeting rich people. For tax cuts, are you kidding me? This bill keeps it solidly in place. That's what both of them are. They're not reducing taxes on the wealthy. They're only reducing it on middle income. Poor don't pay anyway, so there is no reduction there. But when we have a tax bill that comes forward, all the different people come out fighting against it. And I just don't see why this means that breast cancer research won't go forward, that the Boise Rescue Mission isn't going to have people drop off canned goods and write checks because of the work that they do to get the homeless people off the streets. It's powerful stuff. And when our economy is doing better and people are doing better and GDP is growing a little bit faster because private sector has more money, which is not even an argument. I mean, the leftist of the leftists don't argue that the economy does better under private sector than it does under a dictatorship. It always does better. The individual does better than centralized planning. And when that's the case and we all have more money, I think it's silly. It's a silly argument to say, well, nobody will give money to charity because I now have all my pockets are stuffed with cash and I was not doing as well before. But now that I don't get a tax deduction, I'm not going to give any away. I think that's crazy. I think it's just crazy.
Me too.
It's not been true historically. And if we really focus on what's right for the economy, not what's right for social engineering. And social engineering, I would define as corporate welfare. Hey, you know what? We need a subsidy on corn. So let's make it up. We want to burn more greenhouse gases making ethanol, but we can pretend and hide behind it being really green when all we're really doing is throwing money at the farmers. Or even worse than that, at the people that manufacture the silly fuel. That's corporate welfare, and that's never done by the markets. That's only done by government, by lobbyists, by tax code. And that's what I want to see us get away from, because the market will take care of that. You would never see ethanol because it's not economically feasible, only if government gives in. You wouldn't see Tesla burning zillions of dollars if they didn't have $40,000 a car in taxes. Why don't they give me that on my General Motors car? I don't know. Because he's more connected, apparently. That's what corporate welfare does. It kills innovation.
Yeah.
So
and
anyway,
I don't think you have a good message. You're genuinely helping people. That people want to be a part of that.
They do. They do want to be a part of it. They want to volunteer their time. What kind of tax break do you get for volunteering your time? None. Right? What kind of tax break do you get for loving the people on the streets like the rescue mission does? What tax break do they get for being underpaid and spending their life with people that maybe haven't had a shower for a week and loving on them. There's no tax break, but people do that. They're moved to do that and volunteer their time. It's an awesome thing. It's not because they get a tax break. All right.
Right.
I got to roll, young lady. Thanks. Thank you, Debbie, for your call. I appreciate it.
Okay.
So very much. Have a great weekend. All right. We're about out of here. What is it? Yeah. We are. I got you. I see your note. All right. Thank you so much. I don't know what's going to happen with the tax bill. I just hope that we get something. It won't be perfect. It never is. It may not even be perfect to you. You may lose a tax break that you love. But you know, in the end, if it's simpler, if the rates are lower, we put more money in the pockets of the average person, the economy will grow faster. That's a fact. The rest is just noise. It's angry noise.